Eagles Entertainment.
With the 15th pick in the NFL Draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select...
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by Life Brand. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and we have got another big milestone of the 2023 draft process. It's over, and that is the underclassmen deadline. It happened this past Monday, and we're going to talk through that with Dane Brugler right at the top of the show in Draft Buzz, where not only will we cover that, but also the big takeaways from Dane's latest piece, his first mock draft of the calendar year. And this one, it's two rounds, so we've got a lot to hit on there with Dane here in this episode of the show. Then we wrap things up in Draft Mailbag. We've got a listener mock draft to break down as well. So two mock drafts for the price of one here on this episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast. And if you have a mock draft that you want to submit, or if you have a question about a specific prospect or rankings you want us to go through, the place to leave it is on Apple Podcasts. Go and leave us a rating with a comment. And in the comment section, leave your question, your mock draft, your rankings, whatever it is, and we will get to it here on an upcoming episode. That said, let's get into it. We've got a lot to hit on with Dane Brugler. It's time for Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, well, before we get into Dane Brugler's mock draft, let's get into his thoughts on some of these junior announcements. And obviously the biggest one, Dane, Ohio State quarterback C.J. Stroud. And I know that you had to be sitting with bated breath waiting for this announcement, since you had a mock draft dropping on Tuesday morning and you did not want to have to reshuffle the entire deck. But C.J. Stroud, now officially a part of this 2023 NFL draft.
Yeah, something with those Ohio State quarterbacks. Remember, Justin Fields did that too, where he waited until the deadline, almost the last minute, which is, a tease for Buckeye fans. I feel bad, but
Cardale Jones did the same thing too, didn't he?
He might have, yeah. Obviously that was a weird one because
the small sample size
coming off. Right, yeah, that was a little different situation, but. Yeah, no, that's a good point. And with C.J. Stroud, I think we both agree he probably made the right decision. It's not even looking towards next year's quarterback class and how loaded it potentially could be. Just looking at, what he's done, that Georgia performance was such even though it came in a loss, it was the best game he played at the college level. And so they would have had to raise a significant NIL package for him to even consider it. But you know what? You've got Marvin Harrison coming back. You've got basically your entire offense, aside from your left tackle and right tackle and center, which is a big deal. So I understand why he at least considered it. I know it was a hard decision for him, but yeah, I think we both agree he probably did what was best for him, short term and long term.
A lot of the players on this list that we're going to cover played in the national title game. So some TCU Horned Frogs, some Georgia Bulldogs, and a couple big ones on offense for TCU. Quentin Johnson, considered by many to be the number one wide receiver in this class. And then also Kendre Miller, the running back who did not play in that national title game after getting hurt in the divisional round. But thoughts there on Kendre Miller, I guess, that would be the big one for me. I think we kind of know where Quentin Johnson is in terms of the draft pecking order at this point. But Kendre Miller, what do you kind of view his stock being as we sit here in early January?
Yeah, his is a little tougher to figure out because it's such a loaded running back class. When you talk about that third to fifth round range, third round, fourth round, fifth round, there's a lot of names in there, a lot of guys to consider. And I think it just depends on what type of back that you want. Kendre Miller was recruited as a linebacker by some teams coming out of high school, small 2A school in East Texas. And so, he runs like that. He's got that big size, well-built, tough guy to get on the ground. He has that run power, but he's also a better athlete than you expect. I think the vision runs a little hot cold at times. There's a little bit of Brian Robinson there with the way he runs the football. So we're talking about a guy that's not a day two lock, but somewhere in those mid rounds, I think a team's going to get a good player who was really productive this season. He had almost 1400 yards, the most rushing yards by a TCU Horned Frog since LT 20 years ago. So he had a really good season. And, Max Duggan was the MVP of that offense, of that team. But Kendre Miller was right behind him as the runner-up in terms of, the impact that he made to get him all the way to the national title game.
another wide receiver alongside Quentin Johnson. Jordan Addison from USC, the Biletnikoff Award winner, is the number one wide receiver in college football last season. So in the 2021 year, transferred to USC and had a good season here playing for Lincoln Riley. What are your thoughts on Addison? I, to be honest, when I saw the announcement, I was like, oh, he hadn't made it official yet because he opted out of the bowl game. I figured that was a done deal, but I guess not.
Yeah, he officially opted out because of, you know, trying to just rehab some injuries and that kind of thing. And so, but I do agree with you. I think it was kind of, we've been talking about him as a prospect for so long that it was, seemed like a foregone conclusion. And I was told a week ago that his name was in the portal in terms of, not the portal, but the in terms of sending all the paperwork to the NFL, you know, signing an agent, like it was all there. He just hadn't made a formal announcement yet. And he finally did. Yeah. On deadline day. But yeah, he has a chance to be the first receiver drafted. No doubt. Not the biggest guy. And that's what you worry about ultimately, especially that build. But he's so twitchy in his routes. He understands how to get open. I think the move from Pitt to USC was a positive in terms of showing that he's more than just an underneath slot receiver. You know, he won the Biletnikoff as a sophomore, but so many of his targets were underneath, you know, were just, you know, just it didn't really give you a chance to show his full skill set. But I think at USC, he played a lot more outside. He played a lot more, you know, using all three levels of the field, and having a Heisman-winning quarterback helps do that. So I thought Addison helped himself by coming by going to USC this year, having a productive year, even though he did miss some time with an injury. But yeah, he's right in that mix to be the first receiver off the board.
A Georgia Bulldog, the first of three we're going to hit on here. Darnell Washington, the supersized tight end there for the Bulldogs. Thoughts on him? Because, I mean, he's in a lot of first-round mocks. A player I think we might talk about here in the rest of the show. But thoughts on Washington and where you think he could end up in this draft?
He's a unicorn. I mean, what's the comparison? You know, is it Mercedes Lewis? Is it, you know, it's just there's not many guys that are a lean, athletic, 280 pounds that are clearly not an offensive lineman. You're a tight end, but you block like an offensive lineman, and you have all this upside as a pass catcher. It's just he is a really unique player. And I think that the value of Darnell Washington will be something a little bit different for each offense, depending on what you want to do. You know, it's almost – you almost look at it kind of like a luxury pick. But if, you know, for your offense, if that's something that you – feel like can help get you over the top and get you that next step, I could understand a team in the first round looking at Darnell Washington saying, yeah, we can use a guy like this who you know, can serve make a big impact as a blocker, but also you know, is going to be a mismatch in coverage, especially once you get down there in the red zone. So I think a lot of teams will have second round grades on him. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of teams, and especially in that back half of round one, will look at Darnell Washington and say, man, what he could be for our offense, and that'll be really enticing.
Another guy for that Georgia offensive the front, who's not, honestly not that much bigger than Darnell Washington, their left tackle, Broderick Jones, really athletic offensive lineman, can get out in space and make plays, has some issues with his anchor strength. I thought some of the power ends that he faced in the SEC gave him some trouble, but no question, one of the more higher upside players in this class, and now he makes it official. He is now entering this draft as well.
Yeah, even in the offseason, he gets down to, you know, below 300 pounds. So you put them side by side, I don't know there'd be a huge difference with Darnell Washington. Yeah, Jones is a guy that has a ton of ability. And I think that you saw it, you know, we saw it last year when he came in for Jamari Sawyer, who was injured for, I think, four games. Yep. Then in a national title game against Alabama, they actually bumped Sawyer inside and brought in Broderick Jones at left tackle. And that really, if they don't do that, they might not win that game. And so that made a big difference. And then this year, I thought he got better as the season went on. His second half is better than his first half. He was playing his best ball later in the year. Yeah, you feel like that he is not even close to his ceiling, what he's going to be. So the movement skills, the balance that he plays with, the natural power, there's a lot of things that you check the boxes. And it's why some teams believe he'll be the first tackle drafted. He's at least in that conversation with Paris Johnson and Skoronski, depending on what position you project him at. He's the order of those tackles are going to be different from team to team.
The first guy on this list that I have no feeling on whatsoever is Anthony Bradford, the offensive lineman from LSU, who he officially also declared for this draft as well. Any thoughts on what Anthony Bradford brings to the next level?
I do need to watch more of him. You know, I was told back in, you know, late October, early November, hey, this guy's pretty good. You know, make sure you check him out. And I did. And I didn't think he was very good. But you know what? I've only looked at two tapes so far. I think it was, what, Tennessee and Florida maybe. And he was not good. And even in the Tennessee game, they had a bump about the left tackle. And that's that wasn't a great look for him. But, you know, there's ability there. It's just it doesn't look very consistent. He doesn't play in unison. His lower half and upper halves are on different pages. So I'm eager to dive into some of his later in the season tape, Georgia in the SEC championship game, even Purdue in the bowl game, just to see how he progressed. So he's a guy that I need to do more work on. But, you know, he's an interesting player.
Three defensive players, and we'll start with the only guy that's up front with this group, and that's Felix Anadike Uzama from Kansas State, a pass rusher. I studied him in the summer, and I had some thoughts on him. I'm interested to kind of get your feelings here. You'll see him in most mock drafts in the back end. He's a very chic pick in like the 28 to 32 range, depending on how many picks you have in your mock. But what are your thoughts there on Anadike Uzama?
I didn't see that. I don't know if you did. I did not see a first round player. I didn't even, I gave him a third round grade myself. And I know even that's higher than how some NFL teams see him. And he's a good player. I think there's a lot there to work with. He's going to play in the NFL. There's no doubt. But, you know, there's some things to his game that, you know, and it can be tough at times because Kansas State runs that 3-3-5. And so a lot of times he's head up over the tackle.
Yep.
Doesn't get, you know, a chance to just, you know, use these different moves for off the edge. He's really forced to engage and then work off of that. And that's not really his game. But, you know, interesting backstory coming from, you know, not having a lot of offers. Kansas State came in the picture really late, you know, like Kansas State tends to do, and find these guys. You know, he was once committed to North Dakota State. And so, you know, he was very light coming out of high school, put on some weight. The growth potential is something that's debated among scouts, you know, just how much bigger can he get? But I think, he could be a solid pro. I'm not convinced that he's going to go somewhere in the top 60 picks, at least at this point.
And then two corners here. Kalee Ringo from Georgia, a lot of people view as the top corner in this class, or debate, you know, one of the top two or three at the very worst. So Kalee Ringo making it official. And then Alex Austin out west at Oregon State. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on him, but Ringo and Austin round out this group of guys that made the announcement over these last few days.
If you have Kalee Ringo as your top corner, then it's based off just projection. And I get it, because the guy is 6'2", 210 pounds. Going to run in the 4.3s, just freak athlete. You know, when he has a chance to see the ball, track it, he'll make interceptions. But when his back is turned to the ball, he really struggles. You know, he doesn't have a natural feel and coverage. And that should worry you if you're going to draft him in the first round. So it's very much a projection pick. And maybe he does figure it out. Maybe does develop, you know, with his awareness and his route anticipation and just understanding what teams are trying to do against him. But it's definitely a projection. And so I don't know. I would have a hard time drafting him in the top 20 picks based off of what he put on tape. But I get it, because the traits are just, they're special, the size speed traits. And so I would understand. Now, I would be interested, and I haven't heard this, but I'll be interested if some teams will be even looking at him as a safety.
Because
of, you know, keep things in front of him. Having that size does have the strength where, you know, you feel like he can become even better in run support. So he's a tricky one. And then with Alex Austin, you know, he had a pretty good season, except for I thought in a couple tapes I watched, he was very handsy, got caught a couple times. So the flags needs to walk that fine line of being physical without attracting attention from the officials. But, you know, he does a really nice job at the catch point, going and disrupting passes. So I thought that he, you know, he's a draftable player. I'm not sure he's a top 100 pick, but I thought he was a draftable player. At least that's what he put on tape.
All right, well, let's get into your mock draft, man, because I know this is always a labor of love for you. This is, what, your third one of the cycle? Certainly the first one this month. It's your second one overall. Okay, so it's the first since the order has been locked in for the first 18-plus picks. And so I want to start here at the very top. A trade up for the number one pick, the Indianapolis Colts moving up from number four to number one for quarterback Bryce Young. And what made you go with that move? I know it's very hard to project trades, especially at this early in the process. What are your thoughts there on just the Colts making that move up to number one?
I hate projecting trades in a mock draft. I mean, especially this early. Indianapolis Colts don't even have a head coach yet. But we know that the quarterback position is priority number one this offseason. And sitting there at number four, they are not promised their top guy. And so a move up from four to one, it is at least very conceivable. Chris Ballard was a scout in Chicago for a lot of years. He knows how the organization is run. He knows Ryan Poles very well. They were in Kansas City together for 4 years. The relationships are there. And I think that if you're the Bears, you're hoping the Colts come in with a good package, because it's a big difference moving down to four compared to moving down to seven or nine or even further, where you're going to be out of range for some of these picks or some of these players that you really want to add to your team, specifically talking about the top two non-quarterbacks in this draft, Jalen Carter and Will Anderson, whatever order you have them in. There is value in only trading back to four, where maybe you don't take the best offer or the team that's giving you the most return in a trade. Maybe you're taking just a little bit, not a ton less, just a little bit less to move back to four and still being able to be in range of one of those guys. But if you're the Colts, look, you go up to the quarterback, and I haven't taken Bryce Young at number one. I understand that, and I struggled with that, because if you know Chris Ballard, you know he cares very much about size. He cares about the norms at positions. It would be a very off type pick for Chris Ballard, but at the same time, this is a quarterback we're talking about, and at the end of the day, what matters more than anything is just, can you be a playmaker at the quarterback position? Do you have the instincts? Do you have the accuracy? And I think Bryce Young has that more than any other quarterback in this draft. And so if the priority remains getting the best quarterback, I still think that's Bryce Young, and he's not going to hit the size thresholds that Chris Ballard wants. And we have to remember too, ownership is going to have a heavy hand in probably the direction they go with this pick, especially if they trade up to number one. And we don't know what that means, but that's something to keep in mind as well. And then whoever they hire at head coach as well. So just figuring out what that number one pick, how the trade up, who is it going to be, what quarterback would they be going up for? There's definitely a lot of dominoes here, but I think at least Bryce Young is in that conversation.
Yeah, I think you made a lot of really good points there in terms of the Colts' interest in Bryce Young, especially, right, is that, yes, it would definitely go against their norms. I think when you look at Chris Ballard and his history over the last few years that he's been the general manager, they've made 21 picks on days one and two. And there's only two guys that I would look at in that entire list and say they were viewed as undersized players. One of them was Bernard Raimann, and that was only because of his weight. And the other was Julian Blackman coming out of Utah, and he was a late third-round pick. So I think when you look at it, they typically are a team that trends more towards height, weight, speed, and that would go against that. But to your point, when you're talking about quarterback, I think some of those things can go out the window if all the other boxes are checked. And so I think that will be a very interesting discussion that is had in that room over these next few weeks. You did talk about Chicago from this end of it. And I do think that'll be interesting to see what they end up doing. We talked last week about the possibilities for them to, say, move off from Justin Fields and stay put at one. But then, door number two is the slight trade down, or being willing to trade down even more for a bigger haul. Yeah. And it's going to be one of the more fascinating discussions here in the NFL over the next few weeks, is what is Chicago going to do with that number one pick? Are they going to stay put? Are they going to move? If they do move, how far are they willing to move down? Because, missing out on a blue chip player like a Will Anderson or a Jalen Carter would be tough to swallow, but you give them Jalen Carter here at number four. Now, I would imagine that most people will have the biggest headline coming out of this mock draft as Will Levis from Kentucky going at number two over C.J. Stroud to the Houston Texans. How likely do you see this? And what do you think about that comparison between those two players? Because again, with these mock drafts, this is not just this is how Dane feels. This is how you reading tea leaves and how you think this could go by the time we get to April.
Right. And again, it's early January or mid January at this point.
Yeah.
You know, we're still figuring out what these teams, how they view these players. You know, the Texans, they don't even have a head coach yet. Obviously, that will play a part in who they draft at the number two overall pick. But I think this is more with a mock draft. I want to lay out scenarios, and based off of what you know, my contacts in the league tell me, a lot of teams have Will Levis as you know, ahead of C.J. Stroud and even ahead of Bryce Young. And so Will Levis is very much in that discussion to be, if not the first quarterback, the second quarterback off the board. So if Houston decides to go that direction, I don't think it'd be very surprising when you know, just look at some of the basic traits that you want at the position in terms of size, mobility, arm strength, the toughness, both physical and mental. There's a lot of things that you just, you know, okay, that's, we like that. We like that. He's a coachable kid. He's very, very smart. You know, and people are really reaching for some of the excuses in terms of, oh, he couldn't play in the Big Ten, couldn't beat out Sean Clifford. That's like saying Justin Fields couldn't play in the SEC, you know, because they chose Jake Fromm, the veteran, over him.
Joe Flacco couldn't beat out Tyler Palco at Pitt, and so he transferred to Delaware. Right. We've seen these time and time again.
Yeah. It's silly. You know, we saw it last year with the promising freshman Penn State has in there, who we'll see next year, but they went with the veteran because they felt more comfortable with that. And I totally understand that line of thinking, but you know, don't use that as an excuse for Will Levis. Now, I do think it's fair that he did not have the senior year that many expected. We've talked about it on this podcast before, but I separating the reasons from the excuses, I don't think it's an excuse to say that, hey, the offense was not a well-oiled machine, in part because the play caller, in part because they lost so much on the offensive line. They lost so many targets, especially Wandale Robinson. Chris Rodriguez was suspended the first month of the year. So there's a lot of factors here that played into why Will Levis did not play at a better clip this year compared to the hype and compared to where he was projected. So It's a challenging evaluation. I don't think it's as clear as some people want to make it. But I do think it's important for people to have an open mind with Will Levis and where he's ultimately going to be drafted.
Well, C.J. Stroud didn't have to wait long in this mock draft because you had another trade in the top five, the Carolina Panthers moving all the way up from number nine to number five for C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud in Carolina feels like that would make a lot of sense. But again, we're still waiting on a coach to end up with the Panthers. And obviously, that's going to have a huge impact on their outlook.
Yeah, and looking at that head coach interview list for the Panthers, it's pretty clear they want an offensive guy. And so it would be interesting who they hire, and then, you know, just looking at how that fit might work out. And real quick, to the point about the Bears, another reason why you kind of touched on this, you know, why I think trading back to four would be the ideal scenario is you're going to get a good haul from the Colts, but then, you know, you might get another big haul from the Panthers. Maybe they can't get a deal done with the Seahawks at five and they want to get ahead of of Seattle, or the Raiders at seven. I mean, you might get another nice little haul if you're the Bears at four to trade back again. And it might be hard to trade back from either a Will Anderson or Jalen Carter if they're there, but you'll have options. And so that's another reason why I think just trading back to number four should be, if you're the Bears, that's what you're hoping for. But yeah, in this scenario, Panthers move up from nine to five. C.J. Stroud's sitting there, third quarterback to go in the top five in this scenario. And we touched on Stroud earlier, just, you know, the way he ended his season, had a little bit more time to prepare for Georgia and really get his mindset right for scrambling and doing more with his legs. And you really wonder how will he be able to incorporate that more into his game as he moves forward in the NFL. It really will be interesting to track with him. But we know from the pocket, he is a very accurate passer, and he will give Carolina a guy they can build around.
So the Eagles' first pick, number 10 in this mock draft. I want to quickly read your blurb here on Joey Porter Jr., the corner from Penn State. With James Bradbury likely to get paid somewhere else this offseason, the Eagles will be looking to address the cornerback position. Growing up around the NFL as the son of a former Pro Bowler, Porter is a long physical athlete, sometimes too physical, with the cover skills that might land him in the top 10 picks. So, Dana, I want to ask you, why Joey Porter Jr. over insert name here? Like, who else was on your mind for the Eagles there at number 10? Why did it end up being Porter over that player?
Yeah, and this was a little tough because both Clemson defensive linemen, Brian Brzee and Miles Murphy, are still available. And so I decided to go with corner over the two defensive linemen, which might hurt Howie Roseman's heart. That might be tough for him to do. But I think that when you look at corner is very much a premium position. And if you have a chance to get a guy that they probably are going to have a high grade on in Joey Porter, and you have a chance to get him there and shore up one side of your one side of the field opposite Darius Slay, I mean, that's got to be something that's very appealing. And this is a very defensive line rich draft, and corner too, but I'd say more on the defensive line. And so you feel good about the defensive lineman you could get at 31 or in the second round, and you take the top corner that's available for you there. He'd be the second corner drafted in this scenario. I have Christian Gonzalez off the board at pick number 6. I think he's the top corner this year. Joey Porter, though, I do believe he'll be the top corner for several teams.
It is fun whenever you have a team in a mock draft that has like two picks in the top 40, two picks in the top 50, to say, okay, would you rather have this player or that player? And as you just mentioned, okay, you can go back and forth on, do you want this corner or that pass rusher? Do you want this defensive tackle or this corner or this safety? However, you did not address either of those positions at number 31 for the Eagles. Instead, your pick was Texas running back Bijan Robinson. Real quickly, I want to get the blurb in here. And again, everybody go make sure to read this entire mock draft. We're not going to go pick by pick here, but check it out over at The Athletic. The blurb from Dane on the Bijan pick. The last time the Eagles drafted a running back in the first round, Ron Jaworski was Philadelphia's starting quarterback, but Robinson is one of the best talents in this draft class and would be a bargain with the final pick in the first round. The Texas running back has no business falling this far, but there just aren't too many clear landing spots in the top 30 picks. So, Dane, I know that you consistently struggle with where to slot Bijan Robinson in the first round of mock drafts, but was there anybody else that could have been possible here for the Eagles at 31? And why Bijan over that player?
Yeah, and yeah, part of it is just trying to figure out where to put Bijan Robinson in a first round mock draft. If he falls out of the first round, it makes no sense. But you know, we've seen in the past really good running backs, you know, falling to the 20s, falling to the late first round. Guys like you know, Josh Jacobs, or you know, a guy like Nick Chubb just fell out of the first round or early second. So it's, you know, people. He's put more Texas fans than anyone saying, no, there's no way he falls that far. Yeah, we've seen it happen before. It's just, you know, the state of the position and the needs around the NFL. It is what it is. And so, you know, with the Eagles sitting there at 31, I'm sure they'd love to see Bijan Robinson on the board, as well as a few of these other defensive guys to give them options. You know, for the record, the top corner that was available here was Clark Phillips, the Utah corner, who, you know, undersized, that he'll be viewed a little bit differently from team to team because of that size. But I had five corners off the board in the first round. So it was a position that was pretty wiped out. But yeah, it's it will be interesting if Bijan were to last that long, and, you know, what the Eagles would do at that point.
So Bijan, obviously a hard player to slot into a mock draft. Who was the hardest player, though, to find a spot for in round one? Who did you really struggle with? Was it Bijan or was it somebody else?
Yeah, I think Bijan, he definitely was hard to figure out, again, just because where do you put him? You know, where there's not many obvious spots. I think that, you know, Carolina, they traded away Christian McCaffrey. So, you know, you could maybe see, but that's, you know, you're talking about the 9th overall pick. And so is that something that do they really want to invest a top 10 pick, another top 10 pick into the running back position? I don't think so. You know, it's tough to find a spot where it just makes a ton of sense. And so Bijan definitely. And then, you know, Anthony Richardson, he's, you know, because maybe he could go in the top 10. It's possible. Maybe he goes in the mid first round. You know, I had the Lions trading up a few spots to get him
15,
you know, be their being their long-term answer. But, you know, just figuring out the right fit for Anthony Richardson, that was tough too.
Yeah, and that's another trade, as you mentioned. So three trades in your top 15. I know that must have been a fun exercise.
All for quarterbacks.
All right, of course. And that's typically what we see when we do see that move up. Hardest player to keep out of your first round in this mock draft?
The hardest player to keep out, you know, I do really like Trenton Simpson, the linebacker from Clemson, being a linebacker, I didn't think his 2022 tape was as good as his 2021 stuff. And part of that is they didn't let him rush the passer as much as they did last year. That was tough. Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama, I think, is a first round player all day. But
you're struggling with Bijan, you're going to struggle with Gibbs. Right. Like you can't fit two in there.
And even more so with Gibbs, because he's, you know, a more specific type of back where, you know, he's going to be 205 pounds and a little bit lighter and, you know, going to be a specific role in what you want to do on offense. So that one was tough. Some of these pass rushers, you know, I think really highly of Nolan Smith from Georgia, B.J. Aguilera from LSU, but, you know, they just fell out of that first round.
Who's the hardest team to draft for in the first round?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, when you look at some of these playoff teams that you feel like they're, you know, maybe, you know, because the window's not closed, you know, and if they feel like one play away. And so trying to figure out, okay, who's this, you know, like, you know, the Vikings, you know, they have this window right now with Kirk Cousins and, you know, they're not gonna have a lot of money to spend. So they, you know, look towards the draft to get better for next year. They're not ready to go into rebuild mode just yet. So, you know, what are they going to do to get themselves over the hump? You know, their draft last year really did nothing for them. You know, injuries, Lewis Cine, Andrew Booth, that really complicated things for them. So, you know, a team like, you know, the Vikings are a little bit tough in terms of, you know, what's going to help them? Because you're thinking long-term, of course, but at the same time, you know, you can only do so much in terms of spending money. And so you look towards the draft to get better for the next year. So, you know, I think the Vikings, some of these playoff teams, you know, really are tough when you try to figure out what's that missing piece as they try to, you know, take that next step.
Is there a fan base that is coming at you hardest? We're sitting here at just about 3 o'clock on Tuesday. Which fan base is coming at you hardest so far?
Yeah, there's no doubt it's the Lions. I love Lions fans. Some of them are very open to the idea of a corner at six and then trading up a few spots for Anthony Richardson. Others are not. And it really just comes down to the way Jared Goff played down the stretch. And I think that a lot of Lions fans are on board with Jared Goff as, hey, he's the guy, you know, and you know, at least moving forward, at least for the next year, next 2 years. And it's just as simple as, again, these mock drafts are laying out scenarios. And if the Lions, like smart organizations do, I think Brad Holmes, a general manager, he's keeping his options open. And if the right quarterback is there within striking distance, then you make a move. And, you know, he is last week at his exit, you know, press conference, or end of season press conference, he was asked about drafting and developing a quarterback. And he said, you know, it's been done many times. And he's like, he's not against it. You know, and maybe he's just saying that. But I think if the right quarterback was there, that they would absolutely jump at the chance. And, you know, we saw it last year where they made a significant trade up with a division rival, the Vikings, to go get Jameson Williams. In this scenario, they're going up with the Packers a couple spots, giving up a second-round pick, which is tough to do. I get it, especially when you have so many needs on defense. But if the Lions believe that Anthony Richardson can be the guy that is, you know, going to lead them to, you know, be the face of the franchise for the next era after Goff, then, you know, it'd be hard not to make that move. So, you know, I understand why Lions fans would be why they would object to this scenario for them. But I also think they have to stay open-minded to the possibilities because unless you're just totally convinced Jared Goff is going to help win you a Super Bowl, why would you not try to get better at the quarterback position? And I understand why you're not all in on Anthony Richardson. He's a very raw player. And, you know, there's reasons to be optimistic, but also reasons to be very, very concerned. But the Lions have also done a lot of work. They've seen him many times this fall in person. So they have a good read on him. I don't know how highly they think of Anthony Richardson, but I think that they need to at least keep their options open. And you know, that's at least one of them.
And even with Christian Gonzalez at number six, like I think there are a lot of breadcrumbs. Our longtime listeners will know I love looking at the breadcrumbs to picks. Oftentimes, you will find a reason why a team picks a player, and there are a lot of those connections. Brad Holmes was a West Coast scout with the Rams for a long time. He's going to have inroads, not just the University of Oregon, where they've already spent a top 10 pick with Penei Sewell, but also at the University of Colorado as well, where Gonzalez started his career. So I could definitely see that fit there in the top 10. I love a two-round mock draft. Well, obviously, every mock draft is always going to have round one, but I love when you are able to dive into round two. Was there a player that you just, you know, we don't talk about this guy because he's never in a round one mock, but it just felt good to be able to get his name into a mock draft in the second round? It might, you know, just a player that you love. You're like, yeah, it just feels good being able to put this guy's name pen to paper.
Probably Tyler Scott, the wide receiver from Cincinnati, sent him to Atlanta. Reunite him with his former teammate, former college quarterback, Desmond Ridder. Tyler Scott, man, I watch his tape and I start to like him more and more. He's a high school running back and they move him to receiver because he's, you know, he's a smaller guy, 5'11", 185 pounds, but he is so fast. He has Tyler Lockett upside. And I don't say that lightly. I feel like there's a guy every year we say that about. But I think that Tyler Scott really, really has that to him with his ability to shift his gears with the top end speed, with the suddenness in the short areas. He has developed really nicely as a route runner. I think the ball skills are very good. So there's a lot there for Tyler Scott that I think projects well to the next level.
You talk about a team that's not willing or not afraid to, you know, to take a player outside the Power Five in a high draft with a high draft selection. Terry Fontenot has been on the job there in Atlanta for 2 years. He's had six picks on day two. Four of them have come outside the Power Five. Troy Anderson from Montana State, Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati, D'Angelo Malone from Western Kentucky, and Richie Grant from UCF. So, yeah, pegging a Cincinnati player on day two in the second round to a team, yeah, you can do worse than the Atlanta Falcons. That one made a lot of sense. Who's the most fun team to draft for overall? Maybe it was an easy team to draft for, just a lot of fun trying to pair players with this franchise.
Maybe the Seahawks, because they have
a lot of picks.
In this scenario, they had four picks.
Yep.
And you know, obviously, I mean, if you watch the playoff game against the 49ers, they need help on defense. And so just trying to figure out, okay, you know, looking at their history, what they like to do, you know, type of, you know, body types and at certain positions and, just trying to figure out, you know, what direction they do to make this defense better. That was really interesting. And there's so many different ways they could go, especially with a top 10 pick, two first round picks. I think the Seahawks are in a really interesting team as you try to figure out what they're going to do.
When you finish the exercise, all 63 picks in the book, was there a player that was shocked, that you were shocked fell as far as he did in your mock draft? Even if it wasn't like, oh, fell out of the first round, but you get into the later stages of round two and you're like, oh, I'm surprised this guy fell as far as he did.
You know, there were a few. I think that even in this scenario, I mean, Jamar Gibbs, who we mentioned earlier, I think, it's tough with running backs. The tight ends, I love this tight end class, but, you know, it's just we don't usually see, like, I have three going in the first round. Usually we don't see three tight ends go in the first round. I mean, it happened, 2017, that was the O.J. Howard, Evan Ingram, and Njoku year, I believe. The last time it happened before that, I think it was, you know, like 15 years before that. So it doesn't happen very often. But then even in the second round, because I had Meyer, Darnell Washington, and then Luke Musgrave go in the first round. But I still really like Tucker Kraft. I still really like Dalton Kincaid. And so, you know, I trying to figure out where those guys are going to go. But, you know, you can't put them too early because, you know, are you going to have five tight ends go top 40? You know, like that's just not something that usually happens in an NFL draft. And so, you know, just going through the process, and Dalton Kincaid's still there. Like, you know, that's, at one point he was falling like to the 50s, and that just, I don't know. I didn't love that because he's too good of a player, I think. But, just trying to figure out where the tight ends could go and making sure they didn't fall too far, because I think they're really good players. That was kind of tough.
My last question for you, we're going to let you go. The Eagles made the final pick in this mock draft, and that was Auburn pass rusher Derek Hall, the senior off the edge there for the Tigers. Let me just read your blurb real quick. With three picks in the first two rounds, Howie Roseman is going to draft at least one pass rusher, right? Hall goes from War Eagle to the Philadelphia Eagles. Who else was on your mind there, and why Derek Hall? Give us your thoughts there on the senior pass rusher.
Well, obviously, I just wanted to sound clever with my War Eagle, right, of a Philadelphia Eagle line. But Derek Hall, you watch that Auburn front seven, and there's a couple of prospects in there with Colby Wooden, the linebacker. I mean, there's guys that are gonna be playing at the next level, but it was consistently Derek Hall who popped. He's a little linear. He's more of a hard charger. His secondary moves, his counters aren't exactly flushed out at this point, but he's so powerful. He's long. And the motor doesn't quit, and that directly leads to production in the backfield. So I think that he is a player that will the Eagles really like, especially when we talk about late second into the third round. I think that's where his value is. And it's interesting with the amount of, I was kind of shocked, the amount of edge rushers and the amount of wide receivers who ended up coming off the board in the second round. It was maybe that's a sweet spot. I didn't have a wide receiver coming off the board in the first, 15 picks, or it wasn't until the 20th pick in the first round. Only three receivers in the first round. And then, it was opening the floodgates in the second round. That's where, a lot of these guys, maybe the sweet spot is. Same thing with pass rushers who maybe they're a little bit undersized. Maybe there's, like a guy like Isaiah Foskey who, double digit sacks each of the last two years. But there's certain parts about his game that you leave you a little concerned, and I very easily could fall out of the top 50 picks, but still a good player. And so a couple of these pass rushers, that was when I walked away from that second round looking at it, the amount of wide receivers and pass rushers were really interesting.
Well, it's a great read. Everybody go make sure you check out Dane's mock draft over on The Athletic right now. You can check out all two rounds with a lot of analysis in there on some of the top players in this class. Dane, thanks so much for joining us once again here on the Journey to the Draft podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, so great stuff there from Dane. Let's now get to one more mock draft. It's from one of our listeners who went on to Apple Podcasts, left a 5-star review with the mock draft, and that's The Scout's Doubt saying, "Fran, a new version of my mock draft. Now that the first 18 picks are locked in, let me know what you think." So we're just going to go a handful of picks at a time. I'll give you one quick reaction, and we'll keep moving here. The top five, the Bears take Will Anderson. The Texans take Bryce Young. The Cardinals take defensive tackle Jalen Carter. The Colts go with quarterback C.J. Stroud, and the Seahawks take pass rusher Miles Murphy from Clemson. Again, I'm always looking at the two quarterbacks, the two blue chip linemen. Who's the fifth wheel here? It's Miles Murphy. I could see Murphy fitting there with the Seahawks. I do wonder how high he goes. Dane had him, I believe, at number 14 to the New England Patriots. I kind of think that's more of where Murphy ends up going in this draft when it's all said and done, but time will tell there with the Clemson defensive end. Pick number six, the Detroit Lions taking Will Levis, the quarterback from Kentucky. The Raiders taking Paris Johnson, the left tackle from Ohio State. The Atlanta Falcons taking Tyree Wilson, the pass rusher from Texas Tech. The Carolina Panthers ending up with quarterback Anthony Richardson. And then the Eagles taking Christian Gonzalez, the corner from Oregon. So Will Levis going to Detroit, definitely can see that happening. Paris Johnson makes a ton of sense. Tyree Wilson makes a lot of sense for the Atlanta Falcons. I really like Christian Gonzalez. And I think of all the corners in this class, if you're going to sell me on upside, I think Gonzalez has the most man-to-man upside in this class. He came into the year not having an interception to his name. He had four this year for Oregon in a new system, a new scheme. And I really like the upside there with his ability to play the football in the air, with his ability to hang in man-to-man coverage and in zone. We've seen him make plays in both phases here this year. And I thought he got better as a run defender this year with the Ducks as well. So I do like the Christian Gonzalez there at number 10. Let's now go to the next five. The Tennessee Titans at 11, taking Peter Skoronski, the left tackle from Northwestern. Quentin Johnson, the speedy wide receiver from from TCU. He goes to the Houston Texans at 12. The Jets taking athletic versatile safety Brian Branch from Alabama. The New England Patriots end up with Jackson Smith and Jigba, the wide receiver from Ohio State. And then the Green Bay Packers at number 15 take Notre Dame tight end Michael Mayer. I think Mayer makes a lot of sense there for Green Bay. Smith and Jigba slides right in and becomes their number one threat at wide receiver, in my opinion, for the New England Patriots. And I love Brian Branch going at number 13 to the Jets. Let's go to a few more here. Kaylee Ringo, the Georgia corner, he ends up at number 16 to the Washington Commanders. The Pittsburgh Steelers, Broderick Jones, the Georgia left tackle, he goes to the Steelers. That makes sense. Joey Porter Jr. going to the Detroit Lions. I actually really like that fit, that pick. That makes a lot of sense. I could absolutely see Joey Porter Jr. ending up there with the Detroit Lions. That's one of my favorite picks in this mock. The Tampa Bay Bucks taking Eli Ricks, the corner from Alabama. Antonio Johnson going at number 20 to the Seahawks. I absolutely can see Johnson going this high. I know he's kind of getting slept on right now. He was a top 15, top 20 type pick in the summer. And, you know, Texas A&M didn't have the best season. And so the shine has kind of worn off a little bit. But I think as a player, Johnson is absolutely deserving of going that high. At 21, the Jacksonville Jaguars taking USC wide receiver Jordan Addison. We talked about him earlier. 22, the Giants taking linebacker Trenton Simpson. That definitely fits that profile of that defense and what they try to do. Brian Brezzi, defensive tackle, goes to the Baltimore Ravens at 23. That is a Ravens pick through and through. And you're sitting here on April 29th saying, how the hell did they end up with Brian Brezzi? That feels like a Ravens pick all day. Jalen Hyatt, that's going to be a very chic pick to the Chargers at number 24. And then the Dallas Cowboys taking Kayshon Boutte, the talented wide receiver from LSU, can absolutely see that pick as well. I like that fit and that selection there by the Dallas Cowboys. Let's go here with the final seven picks here for this mock draft. At number 26, the Cincinnati Bengals taking Notre Dame pass rusher Isaiah Foskey. Can definitely see that one. The Minnesota Vikings taking Cam Smith, the South Carolina corner. That one has become a very popular pick in mock drafts. Broncos taking Anton Harrison, the tackle from Oklahoma. I think that is a projection pick. I don't know that what Harrison has put on tape up to this point would warrant a top 30 selection, but we will see as he continues to go through the rest of the pre-draft process. Bijan Robinson finds at home, and it is the number 29 to the Buffalo Bills. After they just took James Cook this high and they spent day two picks on Moss and on Singletary, it would surprise me to see the Bills spend another high asset on the running back position, but we will see. And it's, again, that's why it makes the Bijan selection so tough to be able to peg, as Dane spoke about earlier. At number 30, the Chiefs selecting Marvin Mims. I can see that fit. And then Nolan Smith at number 31 to the Philadelphia Eagles. You will be hard-pressed to find a bigger fan of Nolan Smith than me. So I do love that pick for the Eagles at number 31. So Scott Stout, outstanding job with a mock draft here. If you have a mock draft that you would like to submit, maybe it's not all the entire first round. Maybe it's Eagles only or whatever your favorite team is. Or maybe it's two rounds and you want me and Ben to break it down or me and Dane to break it down. Whatever it is, go on Apple Podcasts, submit it with a review, and we will break it down here on an upcoming episode. That said, we'll be back later this week here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.